Blog Talk Radio.
Without a woman or a girl. Brother Brown, how you doing? Sitting
going
in
right,
Mother Hattie, welcoming in a woman, women united. This is Sister Shira. Mother Hattie will maybe not be joining us, but I tell you what, you and David are on the line.
Yes.
So you guys can open up. Hi, David.
Hi.
How you doing, Brother
okay.
David?
So, Hattie asked me to conduct a conference call. She's going to be tied up until 2:30. And I asked her if she had any specific topic that she wanted me to discuss, which she didn't. So I'm going to start by inviting anybody who has something to say to come on and say it. And we'll talk about it.
Well, I think we're not paying enough attention to this. We're paying too much attention to this presidential race. And we're not paying enough attention to what's going on with the resurfacing of heroin in our community. The CIA bought crack cocaine and you're doing the AIDS. And it devastated the black community for 30 years. Now, crack cocaine has disappeared. There's an influx of heroin. So, we have an epidemic proportion of OxyContin, Percocet, Vicodin, and the granddaddy heroin that's plaguing our peace. And we're not focusing on that. We just went through 30 years of children being born with crack addiction. And all kinds of behavior. Now they're trying to put another drug, they're trying to put all of these drugs, but they're coming from a pharmaceutical standpoint. You know, and we're faced with the same kind of epidemic, and we're not paying attention to that.
Yep. That's so true, Brother Brown. That's what I've been thinking about a lot lately with all of this mess that's in the communities. And from my understanding, a lot of the Aryan Nation groups are the ones that's behind the meth production and distribution. And then
right.
they're finding these blacknecks to, you know, sell it in the community. And it's something that people are not paying attention to. I really started noticing it on a couple of shows that I watched on Netflix that the whole, you know, it was just like a little sidebar, that these Aryan Nation people were setting up their little camps and all of this and actually having these meth labs and distributing this stuff right in the community. And just like what you said, Brother Brown, we're just coming off of it.
And, you know, with the influx of heroin, because not that many black people are addicted to meth, to that meth shit, but a lot of them are addicted to heroin. And what's happening in our communities, man, the heroin users are getting younger and younger because they're not shooting dope. They're not using either. They're snorting dope, but they're getting the same habit. And we're not paying attention to it. We're paying attention to Donald Trump. We're paying attention to this Empire shit that's getting ready to come on. They even got people right now playing Empire Party. Women are going out buying the laptop. Empire Party, for, you know, the coming show up coming up, Empire Party. Yeah, they got people out there playing Empire Party, where, you know, everybody's going to get together, and they got these big 60-inch TVs, and, you know, they're going to have this refreshments at somebody's house, and they're going to look at cooking.
Well, but you know what, Brother Brown, that's just like with people that are playing the football party.
It's entertainment.
Same thing, distractions and entertainment. That's the way I see it. I mean, that's just my opinion.
It seems like there's somebody in a kitchen or something. I hear a lot of stuff knocking, like pots and pans or something, and it would be very helpful if whoever's doing that could not do it, because it's hard to hear. I hear a lot of banging. I would also like to say, Brother Brown, I disagree with you about the irrelevance of the political landscape. I think it is very important, and I think it's definitely worth discussing. But in any case, I think your concerns are worth discussing also.
Well, the thing about the political arena is that in Black America, our politicians are basically handpicked by white supremacists. There hasn't been one Black politician other than some politicians that were left over from the 60s and 70s, early 70s, that has done anything to progress our people. When you get somebody in there like a Cynthia McKinney, what do? They redistrict they rezone her district so that she can't be able to win again. Anytime you get a progressive, radical Black politician, whether it's on the state level or local level or national level, they find a way to ostracize them and get them out of office so that the concerns of our people are not met or even heard of. And they always put these Toms and these house Negroes in there because they know that they can basically get what they can get their agenda over by padding the payroll. I mean, it's been done for many years. You know, it's the same thing with the era that they call Reconstruction, when you had Black politicians. Some of the Black politicians got caught up in scandals because they were set up. They were set up, and then after the 1876 presidential election, you understand me, when the South decided that they were going to be in control, which they were, they removed the troops from the South. They did all the things to reverse the elements of liberties that were given to the former slaves, you know. And they put them back into a segregated mindset and put them back into modern-day slavery, which we still suffer from today. So when you get these politicians on that front, what their agenda is not our agenda. And we haven't won anything at the political level. Maybe one thing that we have accomplished with Black politicians.
I'm talking about the political landscape in general. And I think there's a tremendous difference between, let's say, Al Gore and George Bush II. And I certainly would much rather have Barack Obama as a president than the guy he was running against. So in any case, you're entitled to feel that way. But as far as I'm concerned, I have a lot of concerns about who's going to be the president. Yeah, Romney, my God, if we had President Romney, things would be a hell of a lot worse for Black people than they are. I do not think that we are so disenfranchised and alienated from mainstream America that what white people do or Black politicians do is irrelevant to our concerns. I don't happen to feel that way. But in any case, you made your point, and I made mine. So why don't we continue with what anyone else might like to contribute to the conference call?
Well, I would like to know, considering everything that Brother Brown said, what does he think we should be doing? That's what I would be concerned about, you know, as far as all historical background and all everything and what the Black politicians are not doing. Just what does he think should be done about these drug this drug infestation within our communities and everything. We know the authorities aren't going to do anything about it. Basically, a lot of our problems are a family problem that we ourselves have to handle. And, and if we can get beyond arguing about religion and relevancy of this, that, and the other thing, right down on the bottom line, drug dealers are not running around saying, I got all this dope. What am I going to do with it? Ain't nobody, they're not forcing anybody to take these drugs and mess around with these drugs and whatnot. That is a family problem that got to be straightened out among our people. People have to, you know, this something has to be done within the family to straighten all of this out. Our kids have to be raised to understand the problems with drug addiction and messing with drugs and all that. You know, poverty is no excuse for certain things. You can't say, well, I'm poor. You know, one thing, the class of Karim Muhammad schools, and like I keep saying, I'm not a Muslim or anything, I'm just using an example. Their schools have a very high percentage of kids going to Ivy League college and whatnot. And what they say is, when you walk through the archway of this school, I don't care whether you're eight, whether you're poor, whatever, you're here to learn. And they use discipline, which our people don't have, to make sure them kids get their grades down and get their learning and whatnot. It's a matter of values, which we are sincerely lacking. To blame the white, the Aryan nation for this, and to blame the CIA for that and all that, they can't force you to take the drugs. It's a family problem, and it's a values problem. People have to raise their children and make sure their communities are in a situation to where their kids know better. We ain't the only people that have drugs.
Let me speak from the standpoint of a former heroin addict, okay, who was raised in the project, who grew up with family values, and I understand the thing about the drug being my choice. But when people are faced with a degree of hopelessness in these areas, see, when you come up in these areas and you have a lack, poverty breeds crime. I don't care what nobody says. If you
problem is it to reinforce that? Whose job is it to enforce that's the point I'm trying to make. It's somebody within the family's job to interject that within the community, that hope, to make sure that happens. We're not the only people and whatnot that have been subjected to this. People have the ability to rise above these things. We act like we don't. We act like we just don't have the ability to rise above it. We keep falling for the same shuck generation after generation after generation. That says something about us. We know the man is an evil son of a gun. We know what to deal with. We don't need nobody to tell us that. We know that. So we have to rise above that. We got to do something about that. We have to take control of certain things. We can't continue to deal with Aryan nations.
You asked me a question, right? You said, what are we going to do about it? What I'm saying is that when we as a people, not individuals, not your house and my house, not the way I run my house, we're talking about a nation of people who are suffering from a degree of hopelessness and disparity, not a household full of people.
When I say family, I don't mean an individual, personal family. I mean the family of our people. I consider all of us African people as family. It takes a village to raise a child, that sort of thing. I'm talking about all of us, the entirety of us, not my family and whatnot. I'm talking about us as a people. I consider us a big family, an international family. And on this level, it's a national family. That's what I'm talking about.
We have to deal with the reality of not all of us being on the same identical level. If I tell you that it was my choice to go out there and I looked at certain elements in my life and I knew I had to use these elements in order to get the things that I needed, then that was a choice that I took. See, we're all not given the same choices. We're all not in the same circumstances. But what we have to do in a situation that we're in now, after seeing goddamn how the government put all this crack cocaine in our community, you understand me? Now we should have enough awareness. See, we didn't have certain awarenesses 35 or 40 years ago. 45 years ago.
Yeah, but 40 years ago, everybody in the community, most of the people in the community knew who the drug dealers were, where they were selling it, and whatnot. 10, 14-year-old kids know that. Everybody knows that. Then it's up to the family to go after them drug dealers, because you know damn well the government, the police, and everybody else ain't going to do nothing about it. Then it's up to us. If in my neighborhood in New York, let me give you an example, man, where I grew up. It was a mafia area in my New York. These kids, this guy happened to go and rob a bakery, I think it was, which was a mafia drop and whatnot. He went in there and robbed, he held him up at gunpoint and everything and whatnot. The mafia found out who he was. They wasn't going to stand for that. They went out and found who he was. They didn't find that guy no more. They got their stuff back. It was a pawn shop, if I'm not mistaken, and whatnot. We need to have the same type apparatus and whatnot. We need to take things into our own hands. I ain't talking about crazy vigilante stuff and whatnot. But we got to police our own neighbors if we know the police ain't no good and don't have. We know who these people are. We know where they operate. We know what's going on. It's up to us to kick them out. It's up to us. Nobody else is going to do it.
My thing about that is this. Okay, you can't kill a problem unless you can't kill a snake unless you cut his head off. And what I'm saying is this: the drug problem in Black America has a snake, and until we understand how to decipher the snake's head, we will never kill the snake. Because that's the only way you kill a snake. You got to cut his head off so he won't live.
We ain't talking about snakes, though. That's just an analogy. We're not talking about snakes.
This is my analogy. In order for us to defeat the drug element, we have to do what was done with the Panther Party in the 60s. We have to organize ourselves around community efforts. And when we see these things springing up, we eliminate them. Bottom line.
Absolutely. That's not what we're doing, though.
If you eliminate the source, the source is going to get higher. Once you eliminate the street level dealer, they can always be replaced. That's not the head of the snake. The head of the snake is the supplier. We would not have this problem if we could control the supply of drugs that's coming through our community. Then you can knock off a little guy on the corner and say, don't bring it in here no more. But you're not killing the head of the snake. Because guess what? The snake gonna replace him with somebody else and give him a larger weapon than two or three guys around him. You're not satisfying.
Yeah, but the snake is outnumbered in the community. There's more people in the community. We have enough human resources, man, to take care of our communities. Basically, that's what it's about. You might not kill the snake, but if you have opposition to the snake ain't gonna come in the community. If there's a community of mongoose and whatnot, man, the snake knows better than going into that community and dealing with all them mongoose. We don't have enough mongoose. That's what the problem is. The community has to police and take care of itself because we know nobody else is going to do it. We still have a slave mentality expecting somebody to come and do something for us. Pass laws, give us jobs, do this, do that. We need to do it ourselves.
I don't care
what analogy you use. If we don't do it ourselves, it ain't going to get done because it ain't never been done. The drugs are always going to be there. They're always going to be there. We ain't going to be able to eliminate that. We live behind enemy lines. We got to understand that. And whatnot. So we
got to
secure
our area. My point is this, and I always use my own analogy. I don't use anybody else's. We in Black America are in a terrible war. And when I say war, that means not just the war on drugs. We are being attacked from different elements on all fronts. And if we don't organize ourselves and understand the nature of the diabolical elements of white supremacy, and racism, and look at it from that perspective. See, there's no other way that African people cannot look at what has been done to us over a period of 2,000 years and not understand white supremacy and racism. It's impossible. And I'm not saying that that is the only tool that has been used against us. I'm not saying that we don't know that white people are our enemies or nothing like that. White supremacy is not white people, it's white supremacy. Okay, that this is not our problem, then what we have to understand is that when you organize yourself, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to organize people. Me and Sister Shara and a few others, we've been on this road now for over a year and a half. we organize ourselves. It's not nothing great. It's not nothing that nobody should give us any accolades to about our success on the radio. It's just that we organize ourselves around the effort, and we're a small group of people, and we took a joint effort to keep this thing going. And that's what we have to do in our communities. You start organizing with a small group of people, letting a small group of people understand this is a problem in our community. We need to eradicate it.
I totally agree with you, brother, but
okay,
that ain't what we're doing.
It can be done if we do it. But when we
I totally agree. But that's not what we're doing, though.
Well, I mean...
That's my point, though. That's not what we're doing. We're not doing that. I agree. That's exactly what we have to do.
Well,
but we're not doing it.
Because you don't live all across the country. You can't say what people aren't doing. Because you don't live
I'm responding to what you're talking about as far as the infestation of these communities with these drugs, generation after generation after generation after generation and whatnot.
Right.
Obviously, we're not doing enough. We are not doing enough. We know nobody else is going
to
do it. It's as simple as that. I think both of us are saying the same thing. We got
to
do for ourselves, but we ain't doing for ourselves, and that's what I'm saying.
If you don't get out there and start organizing people in your community and educating the people as to the infestation of this, okay, it's the same thing I did with working with kids that can't read. I went on the computer. I pulled up the statistics of kids in certain grade levels in my county only. When I know that these young boys in my county was targeted at the age of 8 years old, I brought it upon myself to go to the elementary school. I didn't ask for nobody's help. I didn't go around to no churches. I took it upon myself to go and sit down with the education people, see how I could work with these kids. As long as you got an effort to get up and do something, somebody will help you. But we can't.
I agree.
This is what I do. I don't ask for anybody to help me. So when I started doing that on my own, then people started saying, "What can I do to help?" That's the beginning stages of organizing. When somebody sees you doing something, then they won't mind helping you.
I totally agree.
And complain. If you see a problem, it's just like I look at it as a math problem. When you have a math problem, the first thing you have to do is decipher the problem, figure out which way is the best way to solve the problem, and then you put your plan into action, and you want results. And that's what I do.
I totally agree, but I don't see it happening on a national scale. That's my point.
It's not going to happen like that. It's going to have to be small pockets of people organizing around small pockets of elements. It's the same thing that happened to Umar Johnson when he tried to get all of this money to buy this new school. Instead of him saying, you know what, I'm going to start little teeny pockets of school to educate small groups of kids and then let it grow. If we're looking for some one national element to come and unify all of us at one time, it ain't going to happen. It never has happened. So what we have to understand is go back to the drawing board, go back to the wheel, reinvent the wheel, and say, guess what? This is what I can do here, and when I do it, somebody's going to catch on. And learn how to use the spiritual power of our ancestors. That's a spiritual power that we have in our possession that we have never had access to because we never learned it. If we learn how to use what was left to us, and not the King James Bible, not the Holy Quran, but the power of our ancestors, how many of us do that on a daily basis? How many of us wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and make libation to our ancestors? How many of us ask our ancestors for the spiritual guidance, wisdom, and knowledge to lead their people? These are the things that we need so that they can work for us.
Well, you know what? When we realize we're not a Western people and stop trying to use Western methods to try to straighten out our situations like these three major religions that we subscribe to, then maybe we will. But we still, I don't care. If you look at our actions, the way we think and the things we do, our people think we're Western people, and that's one of the problems. We're not, and all the things we think is going to help us that we try to do, it's not going to work. It might work for so-called white folks. It ain't going to work for us. I agree with you on that level, that spiritual level. I totally agree with you. But basically, man, we're still wedded to these Western and Arabic religions, false religions and whatnot, that ain't doing a damn thing for us and whatnot. So once we can tune into that spirituality, which I totally agree with, you know, I think things will start to change and reverse itself. It'll give us something to work with, but we're not doing that, and that's one of the problems. It's really hard to convince people that these deities and these gods that they've been worshiping, it ain't working, and you know, it ain't going to work.
Instead of saying we, you know what I learned how to do? I learned this because I learned this from one of my mentors, and he passed on that. Instead of always saying we, I had to replace we with I. What am I doing? What efforts am I going to put forth to change things that I know I can change? And I learned how to take things, not for granted, but to take things in stride. I can't worry about those that don't understand. I can't worry about those that don't catch on. I can only worry about what I can do, and what I can do in my form of education has helped progress other people. I have helped educate people who do not have knowledge of certain things, and that's what I look at. I can't wait for 25 people to decide that they want to do what I do. I can't wait for 25 people to give me a coalition of things to do. It's like right now in Salisbury, Maryland, they're having a thing about a curfew for kids hanging out in the street, 13 and 14, hanging out after 2 o'clock in the morning. Okay, I talked to the police chief and told her how to implement this because that's something that we implemented when I was living in Virginia. And I got the support of the whole city council. Why? Because I gave them one reference. How many people in this room has visited a mall and zipped down a body bag of a 13 or 14-year-old kid who was killed in a drive-by drug shoot? Nobody had an answer. So in order to avoid that, yeah, they don't have any business on the street at 2 o'clock in the morning. They don't have any business after 11. So there's something that I could do to help that situation. Now, I came at odds with the NAACP. I came at odds with the ACLU representative and the Black Lives Matter representative. They all came against me, telling me you're violating the rights of these children and this and that. And I told them children don't have any rights when they're in the street. They don't have any rights. They don't have no rights in the street because guess what? Bullets have no names. And the police job is not to raise your children or protect your children at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning when they should be in a safe environment.
Absolutely. Well, that's what I'm saying.
So when it comes a time that things need to be done from that perspective, I don't look for me. The we that I look for is my ancestors. When I pray to my ancestors daily before the sun comes up every morning, religiously, I know that regardless of the circumstances that I face during the course of the day, whatever course I may take, I know it's going to always be results that's going to be positive. That's the way I look at the energy that my ancestors give me. I cannot wait for the church. I can't wait for so-called political leaders. I can't wait for other people to do what we should have been doing years ago. But now that we have that knowledge, my ancestors have told me to tell my people, it doesn't take a whole multitude of people to make them work for the good of our people. It just
Well, we're in agreement. I feel the same way. We're in agreement. I feel the same way. I just think that, like I said, it's family. It's our family.
Well, we have to use our ancestors. We have to use our ancestors to give us that family bond with our people. Let's do it. Let's use that on a daily basis, and whatever needs that we have to be met, let's let our ancestors be our guides, because that's what they're here for. They never died, and they never went to heaven. They never went to hell. They're right there making intercession for us in the spirit world. Learn how to use. That's what we
I
need
totally
to
agree. But we have a very Western way. We have a very Western way as a group of looking at those things, and we have to kind of get away from that.
We who do not have that mentality don't have to worry about it. See, I don't worry about who go to church and who don't.
Well, it's not a matter of worry. It's not a matter of worry, brother. It's just a point that I have brought up. I'm not worried about it either, man, because I'm like you. I do the same thing you do. You know? I'm not worried about it. I realize what it is and how it's affecting our people. That's all I'm saying. I have used
my ancestor worship to help people in the church that don't even know they're being helped. That's my point. I don't care what they believe in. When they come to me and say, I have a situation, my son is locked up, or whatever I do through my organization, I use the spiritual power that I know I can use. I don't care who they pray to. My thing is to get results. If I started out with 10 kids on a reading program, and they can go to any church they want to go to, my thing is to bring the reading scores up for these kids, bring the math scores up. Once I have accomplished that, I don't care where they go. But I know the result is that these kids are now honor students. That was my result. So what I'm saying is that if I have to use my African spirituality on an individual basis to get a multitude of things done, that's what I have to do. If anybody want to believe in Western or Arabic religion, that's fine. I have no problem with that. That's not going to stop me or hinder me from putting forth the efforts of the Yoruba of my people.
Well, nor should it. Nor should it. I agree. You know, I'm in agreement with you on that. No, it shouldn't. Of course it shouldn't. You know, you have to do what you have to do that you know it works and whatnot. You're not going to, everybody's not, we're not going to be a monolith of opinions, attitudes, and beliefs. I understand that.
Well, I just like to say something I've said numerous times before, which is that the most important thing that can be done for young people, and as far as that's concerned for adults, is we are not going to make it to any acceptable level of self-improvement by being a disenfranchised nation of followers, you know, and I don't care what you're following, the fact is that the most important thing to me is to give young people and other people too a sense of individuality. I think that unless you, however old you are, can come up with an idea of what you want out of life and a realistic perspective of what you have to do to get it, in all likelihood, you're just going to go with the flow and be another follower. And followers tend to dwell at the lowest common denominator of any group, any social group or any racial group, because it's easiest to follow. You know, the people who succeed, black people who succeed, whatever they're doing, very rarely do they say they did it because they were following this or following that. It may happen in some cases, like with rappers and stuff like that. But generally speaking, a person has to go for themselves. They have to figure out, and that's what we need to do. We need to give our young people a sense of individuality and emphasize the importance of figuring out what you want out of life and what you have to do to get it. Now, you may fail, but if you do fail, you know, and you tried, you're going to be further on than if you never tried at all. And that's what I think. Now, in terms of groups and such, Brother Brown's initiatives with regard to education and so on, I think that's just great. I really do. But I think the bottom line is that we have to have a sense of individuality and take personal responsibility for getting what we want out of life. Now, if somebody tries that and fails, you know, let's say somebody wants to be a doctor and they can't do it. They just don't have the equipment. They don't have the money. If they end up being a nurse or a physician's assistant, if they end up emptying bedpans in a VA hospital, that's still better than being a drug addict. And I think that this is something that young people and older people who still have a chance to make something out of their lives need to be aware of, and it's something that needs to be repeated and emphasized to the point where we're going to have more people taking this position of self-determination than not. We're always going to have trouble with the white man and other groups. The Mexicans hate us probably more than the white people do. I can't think of any group that respects black people in this country because there isn't any. Okay, I think that to me is really the bottom line. It comes down to the individual, and you know, if we can initiate, you know, educational activities and so forth. If we can have our own private war against drugs, which seems like a very dangerous situation to put oneself in, but it's dangerous as it is, you know, these things will make a big difference, but nothing will make as big a difference as a sense of individuality. And we have to make sure that young people, young black people in this country realize if they're just going to go with the flow, they're going to go from the elementary and secondary education system into the penitentiary. That's what they're looking at by being followers. All right,
Well said.
Well, I disagree with that because, number one, when we always talk about individuality and success, when you said how they should succeed, we have never, ever studied other nationalities of people and understood their success is based on unity. See, one of the problems I have is that we can think individually, but we have no unity. In other words, we're not willing to sacrifice the elements of trying to succeed and looking for the American dream or looking for something that somebody has placed before our face instead of looking for goals or unity. See, my thing about it is that I try to unify people based upon African principles. I'm not trying to unify anybody based upon European principles. European principle of capitalism has not brought any unity or liberation to African people. It never will. Until we unify ourselves along the initiatives, let's say of Dr. Marcus Mozart Garvey or somebody like the UNIA, that's unification. There was one man that came with nothing in his pocket, and in a short span of time, built a worldwide organization with no money. So when we say that it can't be done with unifying ourselves, that we have to think about ourselves on an individual basis, for individual people, why can't we use the same thing that Marcus Garvey did? He used nothing but wisdom and knowledge and his ancestors. And if we think that he wasn't successful, then we're fools. We have to look at Dr. Carter G. Wilson, who gave us a prophetic message. We have to look at the trials and tribulations of Booker T. Washington, who placed us in a position of self-help initiative. But it was all this was done through unification. There was no individual. Booker T. Washington went into that and started Tuskegee Institute with trades for black people. Malcolm Scott came along and said self-help initiatives and started the UNIA when the NAACP was falling and failing our people. Okay? So when we talk about unified individuality, we need to understand and look at the blueprints that have been given to us in the mindset of unification. There's nothing wrong with individuality if you want to be an individual and self-succeed. Go for it. I give you all my kudos to it. But as a people trying to rise out of situations that they have been in for 2,000 years, I say that we should unify ourselves with people and understand that we have to divide ourselves between the haves and have-nots. And those that have, let's go get those that don't have. Those that have knowledge and wisdom, let's support those that need uplift. Okay? We have not done that. Whether we're in the conscious community, whether we're in a political or legal field, we have not tried to unify ourselves with people who do not have what we have. And that's wrong. And until we do that, we will always be fragmented and disenfranchised.
I'll just say that I don't believe in ancestor worship, but ancestor worship, I mean on a personal basis, I've always essentially been an atheist. I have never been a follower or a group person, and there's a lot of people like that. I think there's what you're saying, is, Brother Brown, has a great deal of validity, but I don't think that's the only way to succeed, for black people to succeed in this society, especially in view of the fact that we are a group of followers. Religion is a following institution. You follow beliefs. You follow what you're told. You accept this and accept that, you know, and if that works for people and it works for a lot of people, that's just great. But a person like me, for instance, whatever I've done, I've done because I was determined to do it, because I don't happen to like people walking all over me because they think they can get away with it. I don't care what their color is. And that's all I can say. There's a lot of different approaches. And one thing that I do appreciate about Buddhism, I just like to say, is that the Buddhist believes that there are many paths to salvation, to success, to enlightenment. And, I agree that there's plenty of need for the kind of initiatives that Brother Brown is talking about. If ancestor worship works for Brother Brown or anybody else, that's just fine.
Well, I believe in Sankofa. Sankofa is a word from Africa that means return from the roots from which we came. If we came from African roots, if our heritage and our culture is African, I'm not interested in Buddha. I'm not interested in Hare Krishna. I'm not interested in the Quran. I'm interested in what did our people believe in? What did the African people who were transplanted to this country believe in before there was Christianity, Buddhism, Judaism, and all of that? Because as the first people on this planet that has been traced back to Shiganta Abia, we were the first people. What were our beliefs? And if we return to our roots, which is our spiritual roots, then we have no problem. Now, when we want to believe something based on other people's ideology, by all means, believe it. But I have no problem being African. I have no problem being who my ancestors intended for me to be. My ancestors were not Chinese. They were not Anglo-Saxons. They were not Chinese. They were African. And the legacy and culture and spirituality that they left me is what I should always uphold until I pass on. And anybody that don't want to be African, they have no problem with that. You don't have to be. You can be anything you want to be on this planet. But for me, I chose to be African.
Being African and believing in ancestor worship are not entirely the same thing. I hope you're not saying that people who don't believe what you believe are not, do not believe that they're Africans or denying their African heritage. I don't think that's true. I think people are entitled to believe whatever they want to believe. And if it works for them, it works for them. You know, African or anything.